All right, we're going to begin here on the top of Nunam Aleph, three lines down. The Gemara now is going to launch into an Agadata, which is a little bit of a preview of the upcoming Perek, the fourth Perek, where there's a large mix of both Agadata and Gemara coming up in the fourth Perek. So here the Gemara launches into this Agadata, connecting it to the previous Gemara, which is Edi Dari B'Yerushalayim. Rashi says, since we were talking about Yerushalayim, it's the Yot She'ara, leaving Yerushalayim, and therefore they wanted to bring in the Parshata, the Be'in and the Meimar, the Kamansha, Tita Karsh Bercho, Lestifa Yerushalayim, that God's going to add on to Yerushalayim later on. So here they have a quasi connection between the Agadah that we're about to read and the previous Gemara. So that's why it got inserted here. That's why it's found here, which is the Pasuk that's found in the last Perek in Zechariah, Vaya Bayomahu, Lo Ye Or Yikarot, Vikipaon. And that day, that final day, there will not be any bright lights, and there will not be any thick darkness. My yikarot v'kipaon. What does that mean? So I'm Rabbi Lazar. Ze or shiyakar b'olam ze. That's talking about the light, which is very precious in this world. I mean, it's something that's not found so often. V'kipaon is v'kafui l'olam haba. Now, the word kafui in modern day Hebrew is used to mean frozen. In the Tanaic term here, as well as in the Tanakh, it's used to mean to float, something that's light and floats. So yikar, something is expensive, something that is precious is because it's heavy. And then kafui is something that floats because it's light. So the idea being that something that is precious in this world, yikar, in this world will be kafui, will be light or meaningless in the world to come. And that is in this world when the sun is out in its full force and has tremendous light, which is rare. You know, in this world, it's not something that happens all the time. In the Olam Haba, taken for granted, it'll happen all the time. It'd be something that's just dismissed because it's so common. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Elu Niga'im Ve'Oholot, Shikarim Hein B'Olam Hazeh. This is talking about Niga'im Ve'Oholot, which are precious, unique in this world. V'Kfuim Hein L'Olam Haba, and they're easy in the Olam Haba. Assume he means the learning of those Masechtot of Niga'im and Olot, which are difficult to comprehend in this world. In the world to come, they'll be like nothing. It'll be easy to deal with them. Rabbi Shua ben Levi Amar, Elu bnei Adam, shikarim hein b'olam hazeh. These are people in this world who are given honor, who are precious, who are unique in this world. V'kfuim hein l'olam haba. And in Olam Haba, they're worthless. They're meaningless in Olam Haba. Kiha, Rav Yosef b'rei Rabbi Shua ben Levi. And Rabbi Shua ben Levi, it's interesting that he's the Baal HaMemra here. Because his son, there was an incident with his son. Chalash, he fell ill. Vid Nagid, and he actually passed away. Ki Hadar, but then he came back to life. So he died for a short period of time and then came back to life. He had this, what they call those near-death experiences. And then, when he came back, Amalei Avua, Amai Chazita, what did you see? When you were passed away or when you were in that state, that near-death experience, what exactly did you see? So Amalei, Olam hafuch ra'iti. I saw an upside down world. This is a very famous Gemara, famous statement. Olam hafuch ra'iti. Elyonim lamato. Those that were above were down below. V'tachtonim lamala. And those that were below were up above. Samalo bini. Olam barur ra'ita. You saw with clarity. You saw what the real world looks like. Basically, he was making a point that the people in Olam hazeh, who were important, chashuvim, had got upstairs and they were nowhere to be found. They were nothing. They weren't meaningless up there. On the other hand, the people who were considered to be nothing and trod on in this world were chashuvim. All of a sudden, they were considered to be special in Olam Haba. That's what he said, Olam hafuch ra'iti. And his father says, no, Olam barur ra'ita. You saw very clear. You had clarity. Because now you see what's really important. You understand what's really important. And then he asked him, V'anan, us, the Talmid HaChachamim, Hechi Hotam, where are we up there? He says, Kehechi de'itu anan hocha, just like down here, we command respect and we're given honor. Hacha yitino and hotam, we have that same status up above. So just because we're of higher stature down here doesn't mean that we will not be of high stature the Olam Haba. So it's not everything is hafuch, but the idea being that whatever you see in this world is just a mirage because the true worth of items is only found out in Olam Haba. And that's what he says, Olam hafuch ra'iti. Vishamati, he says, in addition to that, Shamati Shayu Omrim, I heard up there, Ashri Mishabalakan Vitamudobi Ado, So again, this is now a song, so it's a famous line in the Gemara. But Ashrei Shmei Badakan, praise be the one who comes to hear, Vitalmudo biyado, and his learning is in hand. So the simple pshat is, like Rashi would say, and the Rabbeinu Chananel also brings this, is that he knows his girsa, he knows his learning. His mastery over the Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, and he comes with the mastery of that learning. But the Rabbeinu Chananel has an interesting second interpretation. It's in the wider lines of the Rabbeinu Chananel, when he says that it refers to someone, Yesh Mishim Farish, Mish Yavo Bikan Asav Yastim, that a person comes and his actions, that his actions prove that he's learnt what he has learnt. And that's the evidence that he brings. So what does it mean, Talmudo B'yado? How do you have evidence that you learnt and that you were engrossed in Torah? Is by your actions. Because if you put into practice that which you learnt, then it's clear that you learnt. So if you're in practice, your practices should be evidence of the fact that you've learnt and what you've done. And so that's an interesting shot that Rabbeinu Chananel here, that's Ashrei Mi Sheba Lekan V'Talmudo B'yado, is not simply the learning, but the actions that are reflective of that learning, of that being engrossed in Torah. V'Shamati, and in addition to that, I heard, She'omrim, Harugei Malchut Ein Adam Yechol Lamud B'Mechitzatam, those that are killed by the government, nobody can stand in their presence, meaning that they're in a separate level, they're so kadosh that nobody can go into their Mechitzah. Gemara wants to know, Maninhu, who are the Harugei Malchut? The first thing that comes to mind, like anybody, we say on Yom HaKippurim and Tisha B'Av, the Asara Harugei Malchut. Ilema Rabbi Kiva V'Chavei Rav. So that's what the Gemara says. Is it Rabbi Kiva and his friends, meaning those that are found in Asara Harugei Malchut? Mishum Harugei Malchut V'Tulo. The only reason that they're special up in Shemaim is because they are Harugei Malchut? What do you mean? What about all the other things that they did? At their Torah, they were great Gedolim also. So that doesn't make so much sense, because it sounds from this that the only zchut that these individuals have, or the primary zchut that these individuals have, was that they were Harugei Malchut. Ela Harugei Lod. That they were ones that were killed in Lod. Now, the Gemara does not explain this at all, does not expound on this at all. There is a Gemara in Tanit. And the Gemara in Tanit also describes something like this, but again, goes into no detail, but Rashi references to that Gemara in Tanit. The Gemara in Tanit in Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet, there the Gemara says, Ushibikes Toranius Laharoget Lulinus Upapos Achiv Beludkia. And then he goes on there, the Gemara goes on, but again, there the Gemara doesn't explain what happened. It just tells you Papus and Lulinus, his brother, were sentenced to death. They were going to be executed by the Roman government. Rashi fills in some of the details over here, and the Rabbeinu Chananel as well in Tanita. Also, Rashi explains the story, which was that the Jews were accused of killing the Caesar's daughter, or the ruler's daughter. And he basically said he's going to kill the entire city, whether it's Lod or in the Gemara in Tanita, it's Lodkia, that he was going to wipe out the entire city unless he got the killers, unless the killers were brought forth. Now, from what it sounds like, it was trumped up charges. It didn't really happen. But he was blaming the Jews, and he was going to kill the entire city. So two individuals, Papus and Lulinus, admitted to killing the Caesar's daughter, despite the fact that they did not, in order to save the city. And so they are put to death for their crime, but in the end, they saved the city of Lod or Lutkia. And that's what's being referenced here, according to the Rishonim, in the Gemara here, that the Harugei Lod are these two individuals who gave up their lives to protect the city. So now the Gemara is going to continue here in Zechariah. These are the final psukim, the last two psukim in Zechariah. And the Gemara is going to darsh in these psukim, a number of parts of the psukim. I'll just read you the psukim because the Gemara is going to go through them. Bayomahu, ye al mitzlot hasus kodesh l'ashem. Vaya hasirot bevet Hashem kamizrakim lifnei hamizbeach. Vaya kosir biyushalayim biyuda kodesh l'ashem tzvakot. Uvau kol hazovchim v'lachu mehem ubishlu mehem. V'lo ye krani od bevet Hashem tzvakot bayomahu. Those are the two psukim. The Gemara is now going to darshan each of those psukim. Bayomahu, yeah, al mitzilot asus kodesh l'ashem. On that day, now the word mitzilot is unclear here. The translation is bells or something that's on the horses will be kodesh l'ashem. Now the Gemara asks, my mitzilot. What are these mitzilot asus? So I'm Rabbi Shul ben Levi. Atira kodesh baruch hu losif a Yerushalayim. That Hashem is going to expand Yerushalayim in the future. Ad shasus ratz umatzil. To the point in which a horse runs, umatzil. Now, umatzil means to save, but Rashi over here quotes that from Rabbi Makir, Zatzal, that the matzil over here means from the word tzel, that until the horse runs and he has no shadow anymore. So Rashi claims that's at chatzot, in the middle of the day. As long as the sun is either in the east or the west, there's a shadow. When the sun's in the center, then there's no shadow. So Hashem will expand Yerushalayim to the point where a horse will run from the morning until noon. That's how far Yerushalayim be. That's how expansive Yerushalayim will be. And this is the connection to our previous Gemara about where is it considered still to be within the suburbs of Yerushalayim. We saw before, I mean, at Sofim. As long as you could still see Har HaBayit, you could see Yerushalayim, you were still considered to be within the perimeter of Yerushalayim and you had to return. So here it says that the Atid Lavo, the perimeter of Yerushalayim or the boundaries of Yerushalayim will expand to the point where a horse will take from the morning until noon to reach the outskirts of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kol mitzilot shetolim lesus ben einav, yekodesh l'Hashem. All the decorations that you place between the eyes of the horse will be kodesh l'Hashem. When they decorated the horses, when they put on the jewels or whatever was between their eyes, that will be all dedicated to Hashem. Rashi over here says that the mitzilot come from the word l'shom mitzaltayim, which is a musical instrument, which are cymbals, but some sort of noise-making item, again, a bell, or something that they decorated the horses with, those will be given to Hashem. B'yochanan amar, kol bizah shebozezim Yisrael, all booty that Bnei Yisrael collect, ad sha'ash asus ratzu matzil, until the point where a horse runs and there's no shadow, means from morning till noon, yet kodesh l'Hashem. So from the booty, anything that is taken between the morning and noon will be given to Hashem. After that, it'll belong to them. So Gemara says, Bishlam Adaman Damar, according to the one who says, Kol Bizah Shebazazu Yisrael, that it's talking about the Bizah. Then I understand the latter half of the Pasuk. Hainu Dichtiv, Vayaha Sirot Bevet Hashem, Kemizrakim Lifnei HaMizbeach. The Sirot are the cauldrons or the pots in which they cook the Karbanot. Bevet Hashem Kemizrakim. Mizrakim are the basins, are the utensils that they use for collecting the blood and that are used in the Mikdash itself before the Mizbeach. The Mizrakim were made out of Kesef and Zahav, were made out of gold and silver. The Sirot, on the other hand, were utility-oriented, and therefore they were made out of metal, they were made out of whatever materials, but they were not using expensive metals like gold and silver. So what it says is here, the latter half of the Pasuk says, Vaya, HaSirot Beit Hashem, that these Sirot then will become Mizrakim. With Simit Mizrakim, that the pots will even be made out of gold and silver. There'll be so much gold and silver that even the cooking pots or the cauldrons will be made out of gold and silver. So that makes sense according to the explanation that what will be made Kol Hashem from the Mitzilot Asus is the Bizah, the booty. Because there'll be so much in the way of booty that gold and silver will be cheap and they'll make them into Sirot as well. The other two explanations but just don't talk about excessive types of wealth. Mai Vaya Sirot Beit Hashem. So what's that have to do with the first half of the Pasuk? Where it says, Milta Achriti Ke'amar. It's a different thing. It's not a continuation of the Pasuk. It's making another statement, which is, Mit Atre Yisrael, that the Jews will become so wealthy, Umit Nadvi, and they will donate, Umaiti, and then they will bring them. Meaning that it's an independent statement. It's not connected to the first half of the Pasuk about the Mitzilot Asus. That's one thing that we make Kodesh Hashem. In addition to that, the Jews will be so wealthy that their donations will allow the Kodesh to make the sirot, even the cooking pots of the cauldrons, out of gold and silver. Now, Bishlam Andamandamar Biza, according to when it says Mitzilot, is referring to Biza, Hainu Dichtiv. That's what it says at the last Pasuk there, which is V'lo Yeh Knani Od B'Veit Hashem Tzvakot. There will no longer be any Knani in the Beit Hashem Tzvakot. Andamar Hanach Tarti, Mai V'lo Yeh Knani. What does it mean that there's going to be no Knani there anymore? So, Amar Yirmiya Ein Knani. There will be no poverty there. So now, the Gemara is darshaning the word Knani over here to mean a merchant or a businessman. So the first explanation, which is Bizah, there will be so much wealth for Kodesh that they will no longer have to engage in profit making in order to maintain the Mikdash because they'll have so much wealth that's there. And that's what it means. Lo yeh Knani od b'Veit Hashem Tzvakot means that they will no longer have to do business. Or the treasurer of Hekdesh will no longer have to be investing in order to produce profits for Hekdesh, because there'll be so much that's given there. But according to the other two explanations, where we don't have excessive profits or excessive wealth, why would there not have to be anybody who is working on behalf of Hekdesh or treasurer of Hekdesh that's trying to raise funds for them or profits so that they have more funds? So Gemara, what does that mean, Knani? So they say, no, that's the wrong interpretation. Knani here does not mean a business person, but rather, Ein Kanani. There is no more poverty. In Latid Lavo, the poverty be removed And it's a contraction of these words of en kanani. That's what the word kanani means over here. But not that they will be undue wealth where they won't have to do any more profiting. So they read kanani in a different way, obviously because of their explanations. Now, uknani minalan dikrei tagar. How do you know that the word kanani here really means a merchant or a business person? Dichtiv. Because it says in the pasuk in Breishit Lamerchet, Vayar Shem Yehuda bat ish kanani. Yehuda sees the daughter of a Canaanite individual. My kanani? What is this kanani that Yehuda sees? Ilema kanani mamash. If he's literally a kanani, Efshar ba'Abraham b'yitzirat Yitzchak. Is it possible that Abraham comes and says to Bet Yitzchak, ba'Yitzchak b'yitzirat Yaakov, and then Yitzchak commands to Yaakov, Yehuda azel v'nosiv? And then Yehuda goes ahead and marries one? Meaning we know that Abraham instructs Eved Abraham when he goes to get a wife for Yitzchak, he tells him, don't take from me b'not ha'kanani. And the same thing too by Yitzchak with Yaakov. When he sends Yaakov off to Padan Aram and he says, I don't want you taking from the b'not ha'kanani. Time to get married, go back to the family. So both of them instructed their children not to take from b'not ha'kanani. And then sure enough, Yehuda goes and marries into a kanani. It's not plausible, even though that's pashtut of pasuk, is that he did marry someone who was a kanani. But nevertheless, the Gemara is unwilling to accept that based on the Mesorah that we had, both with Yaakov from Yitzchak and from Yitzchak from Avraham. So Elam Rav Shimon ben Lakish bat Gavra Tagra. She was the daughter of an individual who was a merchant. Dichtiv. Because how do we know this? Kanan biado mosnei mirma. So we know Kanan, he has the unjust weights or scales in his hand. But there we see that with the Kanan is referencing to someone who is a merchant, someone who is in business, and he's using improper measures, improper weights, improper scales. Vibaitema mahacha. Then from here you have the proof. Asher sochareha. Sarim knaneha nichmedei aretz. So that it's, again, the words socharim and knanim are used here in a synonymous manner, which is that the sochareha, its merchants are sarim, are the princes, and knaneha nichmedei aretz. And the knanim are the honored ones of the land. Obviously, knanim over here doesn't mean knani, but rather something that matches with socharim, which merchants or business people. So therefore, we had these two psukim that prove that the word kanan doesn't always mean a Canaanite, but rather can sometimes mean a business person or a merchant. Now the Gemara ends off here, the perek, with a beautiful agarata. Vayah Hashem lamelech al kol haaretz, vayomahu yeh Hashem echad, ushmo echad. It's again from Zechariah Yudalid, that latid lavo, Hashem's name will be one. Ato eidna lav echad hu? What, today God's not one and his name's not one? So I'm Rabbi Acha bar Chanina lo kol olam hazeh ho'olam haba. This world is not like the world to come. Ho'olam hazeh al bisot tovot omer baruch hatov meitiv. On good news, you make a bracha tov meitiv. Ve'al bisorot rot, on bad news, omer baruch dayan ha'emet. Make a bracha of dayan ha'emet, meaning acknowledging and the acceptance of the din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when it comes to goodness, we bless Hashem for the goodness. When it comes to things that are bad, we accept, we have a tziduk adin, in a sense, that we bless Hashem, but we say dayan ha'emet, that we just are accepting of God's will in this case. The olam haba, whereas in olam haba, kulo hatov v'hameitiv. Both on the good and the bad, you'll make a bracha of hatov v'hameitiv. So that's interesting, because the idea being that in this world we lack perspective. Since we lack perspective, we look at items as being good and bad. We assign or we view things as being positive and negative because we don't have the perspective to understand what is transpiring. Whereas for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Olam Haba, when you have the perspective on why things happen, then everything is good, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everything for a reason, and we don't have that perspective to understand it. But then nothing will be bad, because everything will be understood. Everything will make sense. The Olam Haba, the mashal that I always hear is someone looks at a tapestry. If you have a tapestry that you look at the back where it's stitched and they put all the strings in, it looks like a huge mess. And you turn around to the front and you have a beautiful picture, a beautiful image on there. So that's the same idea, that when you're looking at the component parts, when you're looking at what makes up the tapestry, then it looks like a mess and you can't make heads or tails out of it. When you turn around, you get a beautiful picture. Same thing, it's true in Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. And also the Rav Soloveitchik spoke about with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Panai lo ra'o, that you're not allowed to see my face, but you can see Achorai, you can see my behind, is that we can't understand things until the Achorai, until afterwards. After the fact, we have perspective, and therefore we understand things. But Panai, but looking forward, we can't really understand things. When we're just in the moment, or looking forward, we don't understand them. but only acharai, but you can understand once Hashem has passed, meaning once we are behind and we pass this situation, then we can finally understand what Hashem was doing. That's the idea that Hashem echad. And what about Ushmo echad, that his name is one? My echad. What does it mean echad? Atu ayidna lav shmo echad hu? Oh, today his name is not considered to be one. I'm Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, lo kulam hazeh olam haba. Again, olam, this world is not like the world to come. Olam hazeh nichtav biyudkei v'nikrav alav dalid. In this world, we write Hashem's name as yudkei vavkei, but we do not pronounce it that way. Nikrav alav dalid, we pronounce it as Ad Hashem. Aval olam haba, hatid avo kulo echad. It will be the same. Nikrav biyudkei v'nichtav biyudkei. It will be written in that way and pronounced in that way. We will pronounce the name Hashem as it is written. So Sova Rova the Midrash of Pirka. Rova wanted to give a drush about this in the Pirka on the public lectures and to explain to people and then explain to them how they said it and how it's pronounced. Latidavo. Amalei Hasaba La'alam Ketiv. Meaning that the Pasuk says, Zeshmi Le'olam, V'zeh Zichri Le'dor. So that says, Zeshmi Le'olam. This is my name forever. So the Olam is written without a Vav. And therefore he says, Zavir Hasaba La'alam Ketiv. Or la'alem, from the cover-up, to keep it secret. He says this is not something that is publicly spoken about or publicly displayed. It's something that we keep quiet. It's not something that is spoken about or pronounced. It's something that's left, the olam haba. So even though yudkei vavkei, we could technically could pronounce it, we don't do it because it's not shayach. It's not relevant in this world. It's only relevant li'atid lavo. Now the meaning of the words are different over here. And that's what we'll see, right? Rabbi Ravina Rami Ktiv, Zeh Shmi Le'olam, Zeh Zichri Le'dor. This is my name forever. And this is my memory or my remembrance from generation to generation. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lo Kishani Nichtav, Ani Nikra. Not like the way I'm written, am I pronounced. Because it says, Zeh Shmi Le'olam, this is my name forever. Well, if this is the name forever, of course, Zeh Zichri Le'dor. When you mention it, when you remember it, then it's going to be the same. So why does the Torah mention Zeh Zichri Le'dor? That comes to teach you that the Shmi, that Olam, that which is written, Zichri, that when it's mentioned, it's a different name. So, because, Ani Nikra, Nichtav Ani B'Yudkei, in this world, I'm written as Yudkei Vavkei, V'Nikra Ani B'Alef Dalet, and then I'm called by Alef Dalet. So the two Shemot Hashem, the two major or prominent names of Hashem, Yudkei Vavkei, which is used to describe Hashem, and Ad Hashem, which is also used to describe Hashem, the Eben Ezra, the Ramban, speaking in the beginning of Parshat Shmot with regards to Hashem's names, over there speaking about how Hashem's names are the part and parcel of the manifestation of Hashem, that the names of Hashem reflect His manifestation. And the Kuzari also speaks about that, how Yudkei Vavkei, as opposed to the other names of Hashem which describe His characteristics, but rather Yudkei Vavkei is the true name of Hashem, that is the inherent quality of Hashem, which is Yudkei Vavkei. The difference in between Ad Hashem, which refers to Adonut, which is mastery or command, ownership, that's the term of Adon, that a God is the master of the world. And Yudkei Vavkei is representative of Hashem, which is, in general, we look at it as being over time. Huaya v'hove v'yeh, that Hashem is, over time, the God from beginning to end. So these are the two different meanings of the Shemot Hashem, of Yudkei Vavkei and Ado Shem, of Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Now, it says that in this world, we do not pronounce it as Yud Kei Vav Kei, we only pronounce it as Ado Shem. I mean, that the only interaction, the only understanding that we have of Hashem is that of Master of the World. But the perspective of Yud Kei Vav Kei, like we said before, this understanding of both what's happened in the past and what's going to happen in the future, that's something, the Atid Lavo, that only happened in the future. And the Gemara here says that Shmo Echad, that His name will be one. Rashi claims that that's also the meaning in the Pasuk of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that the names of Hashem also, that our Hashem is our Elokeinu, in the future Hashem Echad, He will be the only one, that He'll be accepted by all the nations, and that He will be the one name, and the Yudkei Vavkei will be the only name of Hashem that is used, Latid Bo. So the idea being that in this world, that Hashem's presence is not manifest as clearly, and therefore we only refer to God as the master of the world. We understand that He's the master of the world, but we cannot completely understand Him. Whereas Latid Lavo will have an understanding of Hashem, where we can say Yudkei Vavkei will have a complete understanding of Hashem and His ways and everything that has transpired. With that, we end the third perek of Pesachim. As I mentioned in the introduction to the Masechta, I think that the Masechta moves through on a time basis through beginning on the night before the Pesach, which is on the night of the 14th with the Bidikat Chametz, and moves piece by piece through the day. So the fifth parak, which we're going to start after we finish the fourth parak, the fifth parak talks about the Korbanot, or the Korban HaPesach, which was on the afternoon of Pesach. Makom Shenagu is the fourth parak, talks about the morning of Pesach, the morning of the 14th, which is, the parak begins, Makom Shenagu Lasot Melacha Barvi Pesachim, in places where they have the minchag to do melacha on Erev Pesach, ad chatzot usim, until chatzot, then they do it. Makom Shenagu Shelo Lasot, in places where they do not have minchag to do melacha, ein usim, then you don't do melacha. So the only question of the Mishnah is until chatzot, until noontime. But from noon and onwards, everybody seems to agree that there's a problem of doing melacha on Erev Pesach. So the question is about whether the location in which you're in has a minhag not to do melacha in the morning, or also, as well as the, as opposed to the afternoon where you can't do melacha, or is the minhag in that place to not do melacha in the morning, just like they don't do melacha in the afternoon. But both opinions say that there is no melacha in the afternoon. The question is, why? Why don't you do melacha in the afternoon on Erev Pesach? So Rashi over here mentions, why don't you do melacha? Kedei shelo yitarud b'melacha. So he won't be bogged down by the work. V'yishkach b'yor chemtzon. He'll forget to do b'yor chametz. U'shchitat ha-pesach. And the shchitat ha-pesach. V'tikun matzah. And preparing the matzot. L'tzorech ha-laylo. For that night. The mitzvah l'troach mi'bod yom k'dei la'asev maher. It's a mitzvah to take care of all these things before nightfall, so that when it comes to the night of the Seder, they can start right away because of the kids, and to ensure that the kids are engaged and part of the Seder night. So Rashi claims that the reason that after Chatzot there's an Isur Melacha is because of the mitzvot of Pesach that require a person to be engaged in them. And because of that, for sure in the afternoon, it's Asur B'Melacha. The only question is, did we also Oser the morning? Meaning, because we generally don't have half day that's Asur Melacha, we only have a full day. So that those people had the Minhag to make it Asur for the whole day. The others had the Minhag to only make it Asur for the afternoon. That's Rashi's reasoning. On the other hand, the Rambam, as well as Tosafot over here, Tosafot quotes the Yerushalmi, but the Rambam also quotes the same reason, says that the afternoon, the reason the afternoon is Asur B'malacha is because you bring the Korban HaPesach there. And based on the Yerushalmi says when a person brings a Korban, it's a Yom Tov delay. It's like a personal Yom Tov of his, and therefore by bringing the Korban, it becomes like a Yom Tov, and that's the reason why you don't do Malacha on the afternoon of Pesach. That's the source for the fact that you don't do Malacha on the afternoon. So the Rif quotes this halacha. He brings that we don't do any afternoon melacha because of the Korban HaPesach. The Rambam, Talmid of the Rif, of the school of the Rif, he also quotes the same thing. But why? Why? What the Baal HaMor says is, well, based on the Rif, I have something to tell you. That the Isur Melacha on the afternoon of Pesach only applies Man Beit HaMikdash, because that's when they had a Korban HaPesach. But without a Korban HaPesach, guess what? You don't have to have an Isur Melacha on the afternoon of Pesach. That is what the Baal HaMor says. It's also, Rav Ibn Geut also says something similar. They both say that based on the fact that the Isur Melacha on the afternoon of Pesach is derived from the fact that it was Korban HaPesach and it's a personal Yom Tov for you, if there's no Korban HaPesach, there's no Isur Melacha and it goes away. Rashi's reasoning has nothing to do with the Korban HaPesach, so Rashi's reasoning would persist even when there was no Beit HaMikdash. But based on what Tosafot and Rambam say, it would indicate that there is no Isur Melacha today. The Ramban in Milchomot Hashem and the Raivan in Katuv Sham both take the Rif to task, take the Baal HaMor to task on this, defend the honor of the Rif, and say that he's wrong. They both indicate the idea that, number one, when you have a takana that's put in place, which is here, this takana that's put in place, that there's an Isur Melacha in the afternoon, just because the reason way, which is the case here, that the Mikdash is not around, the Korban's not there, doesn't mean that the Isur drops away. Without a Beit Din to come to undo the original Takana, then the Isur Melacha remains in place, and that's true today. And as evidence that the Ravid brings, I think the Ramban also mentions, that in the Yerushalmi, this Machloket, when they discuss this about Isur Melacha, it's Machloket Reb Meir and the Chachamim, who never saw, as they said, Be'enehem at the Mikdash. They're arguing in a time period where the Mikdash is already destroyed. And so that the whole point of this Mishnah is discussing something that's after the Zman HaMikdash. And the Gemara, he says, the Ramban says that the Mishnah would begin with Lo'osei HaPesach. We don't see that. So they don't think it's limited to just Zman HaMikdash, and they believe that this Isur persists even after the destruction of the Mikdash. Now, the Magid Mishnah in the Magid Mishnah in on the Rambam asks a question on Rashi and says, I don't understand, Rashi. You say that the whole reason over here is because of you're going to be associated with all these mitzvot. What about Erev Sukkot? On Erev Sukkot, you also have lots of mitzvot. You have Lulav, you have Sukkot, you have all these other mitzvot that you have to be engaged in. Why don't we say the same thing on Erev Sukkot that we say on Erev Pesach? And for that reason, he says, that's why the Rambam doesn't think like Rashi's right. He thinks that's to do with the Korban, not to do with the mitzvot. The Pnei Yoshua comes to the defense of Rashi over here and suggests that Rashi's point here is that the mitzvot of Erev Pesach are things that where you are not necessarily personally engaged, are things that can be done in a moment. It's almost momentary. And because of that, it's easy to forget them. Bir Chametz takes just a very short time. You do Bir Chametz, you do the Bittul. It's a very, very short engagement with that. Same thing with Korban HaPesach. Korban HaPesach usually sent someone as a shliach to do the shechita for you, to forget the Korban HaPesach. You yourself, not everybody went to do the Korban HaPesach. You had a group that came together and they had a shliach that went ahead and shechted the Korban HaPesach. The same thing with matzah. Usually you have people who are bekiim in it to do this, and therefore you have shlichim that do it. So because of that, it's easy to forget. If you're engrossed in your malacha, you're going to forget to do these items because they're small items that are just not going to be on your mind. On the other hand, B'nai Yeshua says when it comes to Erev Sukkot, the building of the sukkah, nobody forgets to do that. That's like a big thing. That's something you're engaged in. You're fully engaged in the building of the sukkah. Plus, you already started from Motzei Yom Kippur, so it's not something that's left at the last moment. So that's not something you're going to forget. So that's how the B'nai Yeshua defends Rashi's position. The B'nai Yeshua there also brings a third possibility as the Isser Melacha on Erev Pesach, and this seems to be pshat in the Psukim, which I heard from my brother-in-law that he said that Rav Rosenzweig suggested this, and then I just found it now also that B'nai Yeshua says something similar, which is that if you go to Parshat Amor, the Parshat Moadim, over there the Parshat Moadim begins, Elo Moadei Hashem. These are the Moadim of Hashem, and the first Moed that's mentioned there, Moadei Hashem, is B'chodesh HaRishon, Barbasa the Chodesh Barbaim Pesach LaHashem. That on the 14th of the month, in the afternoon, you have a Pesach Hashem. So the first Moed that's listed there in Parshat Amor is the afternoon of Pesach. And based on that, the Pnei Yoshua, the way that he expresses it, it's a beautiful anivut. He says, Lule she'eni kadai. Says, if it wasn't for the fact that I wasn't kadai, aya nirali the farej de ikar min haga de iser melacha kodem chatzot hayom, mishum delachar chatzot pshit de tuba. Because after chatzot, it's clear that there's an iser gamor. Because it says in Parshat Emor, Eile Moedei Hashem, V'samich Lein. Right afterwards it says, B'chodesh Rishon Barasar Ben Abayim Pesach LaShem. Vim Kein, Mashma Dehai Shat Yudal Rechar Chatzot Ikrei Moed. 14th in the afternoon, it's called a Moed. V'hainu Le'inyan Isur Asiyat Malacha K'cholo Shom Moed. It's equivalent to K'cholo Shom Moed. Yidmi Doraita, Yidmi Dorabanan, whatever this, whether K'cholo Moed, Doraita or Dorabanan, but the same thing will apply to the afternoon of the 14th. It's one of the Moedim. And it's mentioned in Parsha Moedot, and that's why there's an Isser Melacha on the afternoon of the 14th. So those are the three different reasons as to why there is an Isser Melacha on the afternoon of Pesach. Rashi, because you're Asuk B'mitzvot. Tosvot Rambam, because of the Korban of Pesach. And the Pnei Yoshua, this is just over here, that's to the Psukim. That's called a Moed. The afternoon of the 14th is actually a Moed in the Torah, and Moed comes with an associated Isser Melacha. Now the Mishnah continues and says, Makom, if a person's holech, mimakom sheosim, if he goes from a place where they do malacha on Erev Pesach, makom sheenosim, to a place where they do not do malacha. Oh, the other way around, mimakom sheenosim, it goes from a place where they do not do malacha, makom sheosim, to a place where they do malacha, notim alav, we give to him chumrei hamakom sheyatza misham, the stringencies of the place that he left, v'chumrei makom shalach lasham, and the stringencies of the place that he goes to. So we take the stringency in either case. In either case, it's going to be asur b'malacha, either because he came from a place that doesn't do malacha, or because he landed in a place that does malacha, so in either instance, he will not be permitted to do malacha on Erev HaPesach. Ve'al yishaneh adam mipnei ha-machloket, and a person should not change his ways because of machloket. So that the Gemara is going to discuss. How does that relate to what we just said before? Before we just said that he has to do exactly the stringency where he left and the stringency he went to. So what does it mean, al yishaneh adam mipnei ha-machloket? He shouldn't look like he stands out. Shouldn't look like he's doing something different. So we have to understand that. The Gemara will explain that. Kiyotzibo, we have a similar idea. Amalich peirot shvi'it. When it comes to the fruits of shvi'it, the peirot shvi'it are mutar to be eaten as long as there is sufficient produce left in the field for the animals. So if there's produce left in the fields for the animals, then you're allowed to eat or keep the fruits of shvi'it in your house. Once kalam l'chayam nasadeh, once that which is the fruits are in the field for the wild animals, once they're gone, then you have to be mva'eret oto min habayit. You have to eliminate the peirot shvi'it. That's a machloket rishonim. What that means, does that mean you have to burn it? Does that mean you have to be mafkirit? How much do you have to be mafkirit? Is it real hefker? That's not really the subject here, but the threshold or the time period in which a person has to be yours when it's kala lechaya min asadeh. So now, if a person went, a malich perot shvit, he took perot shvit, mimakom shekalu. Took him from a place where already there's no more of these fruits out in the field, so technically they are chayav bibiyur. Mimakom shelo kalu. But he went to a place where they still have this produce out in the field. Oh, or the reverse. Mimakom shelo kalu. He went from a place where they were not. Completely later, the makom shekalu. To a place where they were already out or finished with them. Chayav liva'er. In both instances, he's chayav liva'er. Similar to what we said in the first half of the Mishnah, that he has the chumrot of shtei mikomot. He has the chumrah of the place he left, and the chumrah of the place that he goes to. So over here, either one of those places, either it's the place that he left, or the place that he went to now, has kalula chayam in asadeh. They're no longer in the field, and we require him to do biur. So mimanov shach, he's going to have to do biur over here. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, Omer, tzei vavei lecha afata. He can say to the people, you know, you go get them. The same way I got them, that's how you can get them. So again, the Gemara will explain what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing about and what his issue is with the Tana Kama. Now the Gemara asks, Mayriya Arvei Pesachim. What is so unique about Erev HaPesach? So as Rashi says that, obviously, that the part of our Mishnah talks about the fact that there is a minhag until Chatzot, whether to do Malacha or not do Malacha. But the diuk out of the Mishnah is that after Chatzot, everybody agrees that there's an Isur Malacha. So why is Erev Pesach so unique that there's an Isur Malacha after Chatzot? Afilu Arvei Shabbatot ve'Arvei Yamim Tovim Nami. Should be the same true for Erev Shabbat, Erev Yom Tov. Why is this different? Titanio, we have a brayta. Oseh Malacha ve'Arvei Shabbatot ve'Yamim Tovim. Someone does work on Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov min HaMincha L'mala from Mincha and onwards. Rashi over here says Mincha L'mala is Mincha Ktano from the 9.5 hours on the day 3:30 and onward. Einu Re'ez Siman Bracha Le'olam. He will not see any Siman Bracha from that work which he does. So the Gemara says, that's the difference. Hotam, by Arvei Shabbatot and Arvei Yamim Tovim, it's Min HaMincha L'mala. That's when the Isur kicks in. Huda Asur. Samuch L'mincha Lo, but before Mincha, that's permitted. Hacha Mechatzot. Over here, it's from noontime. That's the difference. Over here, this is unique to Pesach. It's from noontime. Inami. Hotam Sim Bracha Huda Lo Chazi. Over there by Shabbat and Yom Tov. It's true that if he does Malacha, it's not Asur, but he will have no Siman Bracha. But we don't put him into excommunication for it. Over here, by Pesach, we would put him into Shamto. So there's a certain amount of stringency associated with the Erev Pesach. So yes, they both, according to the second answer, have an Isur Malacha. It's just that the Isur Malacha that is associated with Erev Pesach is much more severe or important, and therefore we would excommunicate an individual who did not abide by that. Now, what the Gemara basically does is dance around the issue. We discussed it already in the Mishnah, why Pesach might be different. Because in the end, the Gemara doesn't really explain what the difference is. The Gemara says, okay, on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, you start from Mincha instead of Chatzot. Or on Pesach, you get both. It's Asur and Lore Estiman Bracha, plus you get excommunicated. But on Shabbat and Yom Tov, you don't get that. You don't get excommunicated. But it doesn't answer the underlying question of why. What's the difference between them? And that's what we were discussing in the Mishnah already, the different reasons for Isur Malacha and Erev Pesach would be something that differentiates it from the other Arve Yomim Tovim and Shabbatot, either because of the Korban, which doesn't appear in those other times, or because, as Rashi says, you're Osek in those particular so many mitzvot, you have to be Osek in them, or because of what the Pnei Yeshua suggested in the Psukim, that there's a Erev Pesach, it's called a Moed. Because it's called a Moed, there's an Isur Malacha associated with it. Gufa. Now the Gemara is going to look into this more deeply. Someone who does Malacha on Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov from Mincha onwards. Ubimotzei Shabbat. And after Shabbat. Ubimotzei Yom Tov. Ubimotzei Yom Kippurim. And after Yom Kippur. Ubichol Makom Sheisham Nidnud Aveira. Anytime when there is any inkling, little smell of an Aveira, then it's problematic. You cannot do Malacha. And if you do Malacha during that period, Ein Oru Esiman Bracha. So what does they come to include? Kol makom is latuye, according to the Girsa that we have in our Gemara, is Tanit Zibor, that's the Girsa of Rashi. Eino re'eh siman bracha de'olam. You will not see a siman bracha forever. Now, as far as Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, that's understandable, because a person should be engaged in preparing for Shabbat and preparing for Yom Tov. If he's working, then he's not going to be engaged in those processes, and that's what the problem is there, and you won't see a siman bracha from that melacha. Motzei Shabbat and Motzei Yom Tov and Motzei Yom HaKippurim are interesting. Why can't you do Malacha on these days? So as Tosafot explains over here, when we're talking about Motzei Shabbat, Motzei Yom Tov, Motzei Yom HaKippurim, we're not talking about you can't do Malacha the whole night, but rather it's until they complete davening and shul. meaning that you shouldn't jump from the moment that Shabbat or Yom Tov is over, you shouldn't jump to do Malacha. They had a davening, it takes a little more time. A person should tarry in letting the Shabbat go, or the Yom Tov go, Yom Kippur, as Rashi says, because there's an obligation of Mosifim Michol Ala Kodesh, that you should add on from the week to Shabbat. So you should drag out Shabbat a little bit. You should drag out Yom Tov a little bit. There's no reason to end the moment that you could end Shabbat and Yom Tov. There's no reason to end it right away. Person should take their time in letting the Shabbat and Yom Tov go. Tosafot brings from the Yerushalmi that the women had a minog not to do any work on Motzei Shabbat until the men returned from Shul. So that's a concept. And he says that's the same thing here. About Einu Asim and Bracha. Same idea. Until everybody returns home from Shul, that it's not proper to do Malacha, even though technically Shabbat's over, because there's the idea of Mosifim Michol Ala Kodesh. Now, the other part of the Breita, which is interesting, is Mikol Makom Sheyesham Nud Aveira. The Gemara says, Letzatuye Tanit Zibur. So Tanit Zibur, according to Rashi, the problem with Tanit Zibur is that the Gemara in Tanit tells us that Tanit Zibur for Gshamim is Asur B'Malacha. There's an Easter Malacha on those days of Tanit, because they want everybody engaged with the Tanit and focused on Tefillah and doing what they're supposed to doing. So then they made an Easter Malacha on those days. So that's why Rashi claims, the Gemara says Tanit Zibur. The Gra, if you look over here, the Gra changes the Girsa L'Utuye Tanit Zibur to Latune Tisha B'Av, to come and include Tisha B'Av. So the Gra does not accept Rashi's explanation. He says Tisha B'Av, that's based on the Gemara, which we're going to see here in the Gemara in Pesachim, as well as found in the Gemara in Tanit, which is that ain't Tanit Zibur Ayom B'Bavel. There's no such thing as a Tanit Zibur anymore except Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the only residual Tanit Zibur that we have today. So the Gra says that that's what it's referring to over here, that Tanit of Tisha B'Av. Now the reason might be that the Gra argues on Rashi is because when it comes to a Tanit Zibur, the Gemara is explicit that there's an Isur Malacha then. It's not simply Ein Ro'e Siman Bracha, that there's actually an Isur Malacha for engaging in this or doing this. Whereas, when it comes to Pesach or Erev Pesach, there's no Isur Malacha, there's simply Ein Ro'e Siman Bracha. And that's why maybe it forced the Gra to say that we're talking about Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av does not have an Isur Malacha, only has this statement of Ein Ro'e Siman Bracha. Because when you're talking about Gishamim, over there, it's not just Ein Ro'e Siman Bracha, there's an Isur. There's an Isur to Malacha on those days. And that might explain the difference between Rashi putting in Tanit Zibur versus the Gro wants to have it be Tisha B'Av. So Tan Rabbanan, where it brings a Braita, Yesh Zariz Viniskar. It's someone who has alacrity, he is expeditious, he is diligent, and Niskar, and he benefits. Yesh Zariz, and the same type of person, Vinifsad, and he can end up losing. Is Shafal, there's someone who's lazy. Ve'ez a loafer, Viniskar, and he benefits. Ve'ez Shafal, Vinifsad, and there's someone like that who ends up losing. Zariz, Viniskar, what's the person who's diligent, industrious, and ends up benefiting? Da'avid, Kula Shabto, he works all week. Ve'lo Avid, B'mali Shabto, and he doesn't work on Erev Shabbat. So here's a person who works all week, doesn't work on Erev Shabbat, so now, by not working on Erev Shabbat, he is Niskar. He benefits from that, but he also benefits from the work that he did all week. Zariz v'nisad, person who is industrious, diligent, but then loses, is David Kushabto. He works all week, Vavid b'malei Shabto, and he continues to work on Erev Shabbat. So, Einu ro'e siman bracha. Now, it's not clear here from the Gemara, it sounds here, Einu ro'e siman bracha means about everything that he does, not just about that portion that's done on Erev Shabbat. Shafal v'niskar, what's a person who is lazy and ends up benefiting? That's the case. D'lo avid kulei Shabto. This person doesn't work all week. Vavid b'malei Shabto, and he doesn't work on Erev Shabbat. Whether it's because he's unemployed or because he's a loafer, because he has nothing to do, or he's wealthy and he doesn't have to work. Whatever the reason is, he's not working. But he's not working because he doesn't want to work on Erev Shabbat. He's just not working. He doesn't work all week, so he happens not to work on Erev Shabbat as well. And nevertheless, he gets the benefit of that, the bracha that he didn't work on Erev Shabbat. Shafal v'nifsad. Someone's lazy and loses out. Lo avid kulei Shabta. He doesn't work all week. Vavid malei Shabta. And then he only works on Erev Shabbat. So first, he doesn't have any earnings from the remainder of the week, and the only earnings that he has are from Erev Shabbat when the Ein Ro'e Siman Bracha. So that's someone who's lazy and ends up losing out as well. Amar Rava, Hani Neshed de Mechuza. Rava, who was the Rav of the city of Mechuza, and he had a very tense relationship with the folks of Mechuza. There are many quotes from him in Shas about what he felt about the B'nai Mechuza. Here it's not so bad, but he talks about how the fact that they were extremely wealthy and that they were finicky, picky. They were not exactly the most down-to-earth folks when it came to their wealth. So it says over here, Amarava, Hani, Neshed, Mechuza, Afagav, Dola, Abda, Navita, Bamale, Shabta. even though they don't do any work on Erev Shabbat, why don't they do work on Erev Shabbat? Mishum mafkima bekuta. Because they're mufunakim. They are idle all week. They are not working on the weekdays or even on Erev Shabbat because it's beneath them. They don't do that type of stuff. They don't work. So they don't work, not because they want to do any mitzvah, not because they're doing it for any reason, but simply because that's what they do. They don't work. They're not the working type. They don't work any day, and they also don't work on Erev Shabbat. Afilu hachi, despite that fact, shafal v'niskar, they're lazy, and they still benefit, karin and lehu. We give them credit for not working on Erev Shabbat, even though the reason they're not working on Erev Shabbat is because they don't work any other day as well. So Rava, Rami Ktiv, Rava says there's a stira on the psukim. One pasuk says, ki gadol ad shamayim chazdecha, that your chesed reaches until the shamayim. V'chtiv, another pasuk says, ki gadol mi'al shamayim chazdecha, that your chesed reaches above the shamayim. So what is, how kaitzad, how do we reconcile those two psukim and tehillim? So kan bosim lishma, kan bosim shlo lishma, depends if you do it lishma, do it l'shem shamayim, then, ki gadol mi'al shamayim chazdecha, reaches even above the heavens. But kanshosim shalolishma, if you do it without the shem shemaim, it's not the shem shemaim, then we say about that, ad shemaim chazdecha, just until the heavens is your chesed. So we see that obviously doing lishma is much better than shalolishma, but even when you do it shalolishma, there's still a reward. You get ad shemaim. So that's pretty good. So could Rav Yehuda Marav, similar to the statement we saw in Marav, Dam Rav Yehuda Marav, Lolam yasok adam b'torah b'mitzvot, a person should always be engaged in Torah mitzvot, afa pi shalolishma, because he doesn't shalolishma, shemitok shalolishma, balishma. Because if he does it lolishma, if he does it lolishem shemaim, eventually he might end up doing it lishma. So Tosafot right away brings up the question from the Gemara in Brachot. Gemara in Daf Yud Zayin in Brachot says, kol osek b'torah shalolishma, anybody who engages in Torah shalolishma, noach lo shalo nivra. It would be better for him that he wasn't born. So there the Gemara takes a strong stance against lishma. So why over there does the Gemara say, lo lishma, forget about it. It's better that he wasn't born. And over here it says, oh, good, lo lishma, don't come to me, lishma. So how do we reconcile between them? So Tosafot explains that there are actually two different types of lo lishma. Lo lishma is a generic term, but it doesn't have a specific meaning. So in one case, in Brachot, when it says lo lishma, that's one type of lo lishma. The lo lishma that's mentioned over here is a different type, and he distinguishes between them by saying that Vomari, hotam in Brachot, Mari Kigon Shlomeid Kedei Lahit Yahir. He's learning in order to be haughty, or to lord over, Vila Kanter, or to get into a fight, Vila Kapeach et Chavirav, or to show them off, meaning that he's trying to put them down, because he's going to know more than them, he's going to tell them off what they're doing. So he's learning for the wrong reasons, then it's better Shalo Nivra, better that he wasn't born. Because over there, he has specific negative intent with why he's learning, and that's what's making him, our driving force behind him, that we don't want, that we're not interested in. On the other hand, over here, it's a case, Myri, the Dumia, the Hau, the O, Sheish, Falvani Scar, his case is lazy, and he ends up benefiting. He didn't do anything. So over here, Shein mit Kaveh Lushum Ra'ah, he has no negative intent. So here, over here, Slow Lishma doesn't mean that he's doing it Lishma versus there, it's just that there are different gradations of Lo Lishma. You have lolishma and brachot, which is a negative. Not only do you not do it for proper intent, you're doing it for negative intent. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. Whereas over here, you're not necessarily doing it, but you're not doing it for the wrong reasons. So you're just doing it. Like over here, where the person rests on Erev Shabbat, and they're not doing work on Erev Shabbat because they don't work all week. They still get credit for that, or get credit for that mitzvah, because even though it's shalolishma, then they still get credit for it. So then the other explanations, the Ramchal and Mesilat Yesharim gives another explanation of the difference over here, that it's a case of whether you do it le kayem et hamitzvot or you do it for the schar hamitzvot. If you're doing it le schar hamitzvot, then that's what our Gemara is talking about over here, shalolishma, balishma. Whereas in the Gemara in Brachot, when it says it, you're learning, but you're learning with not the intention to carry out or practice what you're learning, that's problematic. If you're doing it to get the practice or carry out what you're learning, then that is something positive, and that's something that even if you're doing it l'schar, shlo lishma, ba lishma. Reminds me of a piece Rav Chaim Volozhin has in his Perush on Avot, Ruach HaChaim, some of the Nefesh HaChaim, Sefer Nefesh HaChaim of Rav Chaim Volozhin, in the back, they published some of the essays that he has from the Ruach HaChaim. And back there, one of the essays that he wrote about is about tefillah. He says that, why do we daven every day? We don't have the proper kavanah. We're not going up there and getting it right every day. So why do we do that? Why don't we wait for the time where I'm in the right mood, I'm in the right mode, and then I go ahead and I daven and I'll get a good davening. For the rest of the time, I'm just mumbling the words. I'm not doing it right. Why bother? Why should I do it? Let's pick the times. So he says that if you're not in the game, you got to be in the game to win, which means that if you daven every day, there's a chance that you'll daven lishma. It's a chance that you'll daven properly with proper kavanah. If you don't daven and you wait for the time they're going to daven lishma, you'll never end up davening. Because you'll never get there, you'll never do it. So you have to be in the game to win, meaning that you have to daven. When you daven every day, there's a chance that that davening will lead to davening b'kavanah. So that's what he suggests over there. Also quote the famous Wayne Gretzky, who says that you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. If you don't take a shot, you can't make it. So same thing, that's what the Ruach HaChaim says, that if you don't do it, if you don't engage, you can't do it. So that's the idea of Shlo Lishma, Ba Lishma. That you have to be in the game. You have to be doing it. So we don't get it perfect every time. We don't get it right every time. But at least you're trying. If you're trying, you will get it right. And that's Shlo Lishma de Ba Lishma. That the Lo Lishma, I think back in Brachot, is Lo Lishma is when you're not even in the, you're not in the game. You're doing it for the wrong reasons. You're doing it for negative reasons. It's not because you're trying to do it right. You just don't get there. There you're not doing it right at all. And there are others over here. I saw others that explain the difference between Lishma and Lo Lishma is between Yira and Ava. The idea over here that Shlo Lishma over here is you do it Meira. And the Lishma is you do it Me'ava. So that's one thing. Yira is still doing it. It's just not the best level. It's not the highest level. Ava is the highest level. From Yira to Ava, that we can say, you know, good, you do Shlo Lishma, maybe you'll come to Lishma. But when you're talking about the Gemara Brachot, that's not even talking about doing that of Yira. That's doing it for those negative reasons. The last interesting note over here is that our Gemara says over here, Olam Yasok Adam B'Torah Mitzvot Shlo Lishma, Shemitok Shlo Lishma Ba Lishma. But the Rambam, when he codifies this halacha in Hilchot Shvuah, says, when he quotes this Gemara, Lo Olam Yasok Adam B'Torah Ben Lishma Ben Shlo Lishma. The Rambam says Torah and does not have the word mitzvot in there. Rav Moshe Feinstein is medayek out of this Rambam that he believes that only in Torah do we say should you be osek shalo lishma to come to lishma, which is not true by the mitzvot. Because Torah is different than mitzvot. Torah is greater than the mitzvot. Because it's mevi lidei maaseh. It brings a person to do. It brings a person to be mekayim a mitzvot. So over there, he says the din of shalo lishma Balishma. And that way you could explain that which is said in the Gemara and Brachot is referring to mitzvot. And that which is said over here in our Gemara is referring to Torah. Now obviously the problem with that is the gears that we have in our Gemara is Torah mitzvot. But leaving that aside, the Gemara here quotes this right after a situation with Rava where we're talking about a mitzvah. We're talking about desisting from halacha on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, which is something that's a mitzvah, not limud Torah. And then in that context, they bring down this din of Amar Yehuda Merav of Eloyo Masok Adam. Shlo Lishma, Kadesh Yavo, Lishma. So it sounds like the Gemara is making a reference to this to the mitzvot. So that's a very difficult understanding, both from the Girsa of the Rambam as well as the Diok of Rav Moshe Feinstein, because it doesn't really seem to fit into the flow of the Gemara. Okay, now, continuing the Gemara. Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, Hamitzah Pel Ischarishto, someone who waits for his wife's profits, meaning that he thinks he's going to live off of his wife's earnings. Or Verechaim, he thinks he's going to live off the mill, the produce of the mill, the wages of the mill. Eino ro'eh siman bracha le'olam. He will never see a siman bracha from this. Now, Rashi comes over here that what does it mean that he waits for his wife's earnings? It's a case where he sends her into the shuk with a scale to weigh things for people or to sell wool for whatever it is that she's doing. It's something that doesn't have a lot of profit. And he's mevazeh his wife to send her out into the workplace, especially in their day where it was not acceptable for a woman to go out into the shuk. He sends her out into the shuk to go do this for a very little amount of money. That's eino ro'eh siman bracha. That's not if he's counting on that to be his wages and his living. That's not a good way to do it. That's why Rashi learns. Tosafot, on the other hand, quotes that the case of here is what the negative thing that she's doing over here, we're going to see in a second, is matveh, that she's kneading or she's doing stitching or needlework or needlepoint. Because the Gemara at the end of Ketubot, the Mishnah at the end of Ketubot, talks about how one of the women who's overet al dat Yudit is a woman who weaves or stitches out in the shuk. Because in order to do this, she has to roll her sleeves up in order to do the stitching and needle, and she exposes herself. So that's what the problem is over here. He's sending his wife out to do this work in the shuk, and she's exposing herself. So, Einro Siman Bracha, Rechai, what's the problem with Rechai? So, the Gemara says here, what's the Einro Siman Bracha? Skarishto is Matkulta. Matkulta, explained before, Rashi says Matkulta comes from Matkal, which means Mishkal, which means a scale. And Tosafot, on the other hand, says Matkulta is Matveh. which is a needle. Rechaim is igarto, is the profits from the rechaim. It means that you rent out the mill to people to use, that you people bring their stuff to you and you mill it for them. So again, ein ro'a siman bracha is because it takes a ton of work to do the milling, and you get paid very little for it, so it's not really a business that's going to be very profitable for you. Aval, avda, umizavna, if the woman, if she makes things, and then you sell that handiwork that she makes, ishtabuche mishabach bakra, then the pasuk says about that woman, that's something, that's worthwhile. Shenev dechti, because it says, sadin asto batimkor, she makes the sadin, she makes the linen, begadim vetimkor, and she sells them to make a profit, to make wages for the family. So that's something that we view positively. So if she does it in the niyut of her home, she produces things and she's able to sell them where you get a big profit for what you're selling, that makes sense. But otherwise, these other types of endeavors don't make sense because ein ro'a siman bracha l'olam. Tanur banan, amistaker, someone who makes his profits from bikanim, with reeds, ubikan kanim, or with some sort of casks or flasks that he's doing this. Ein ro'a siman bracha l'olam. He doesn't get a bracha from this. My time, why not? Kevin de nafish af chazayu, since their volume takes up large amounts of space, shaltabuena, then they get the ayin hara. So since these items have a lot of air space in them, so when you produce them or you're making them, there's a ton of them. It looks like you have tremendous amounts of them. When you have tremendous amounts of them, then people are likely to give you an ayin hara because they see so many or so big, they give you an ayin hara. So you're inviting the ayin hara here because of the fact that that which you're engaged with involves things that are very large or volumetrically large. Tarabanan, Tagre Simta, the merchants of the roads, or the side roads, Megadli Behemet Daka, those that bring up the light domesticated animals, Mekotzei Ilanot Tovot, those that cut down good trees, Pranim Enehem Bechelek Yafeh, those that always pick the best, Eino Esim Bracha Deolam, they will not see Esim Bracha Deolam. My time, what's the problem? Tau Beinche, the people are in wonderment about what they're doing, and they're screaming about what they're doing. So all of these things are items where the people are going to, they're out in the public, people are going to see what they're doing, and people are going to either be upset about what they're doing, they're not going to believe what they're doing, and they're going to get tell on them. Rashi says they're going to tell on them, whether it's the government, or they're going to complain about them to Hashem, and it's going to get them into trouble. So as Rashi explains, Tagrei Simta is people who sit out in the open and sell, that they do merchants that are selling out in the open and doing all their sales or wares in the open. So then you have ayin hara, because your wares, everything's out there in front of all the people. The godly behemoth daka is because their animals go and graze in other people's fields. So everybody's going to be upset at the fact that you let your animals go into their fields. Kotzei ilano tovot is that he's chopping down these gorgeous trees to sell for firewood. So everybody gets upset. He took down this beautiful tree, this tree that was here for so long, and he's taking them down. So it's going to get people upset about it. And that's going to bring to either ayin hara, it's going to cause people to be upset. And anytime they are in a partnership, they always look to get the best. They always take the best. They look to get the best piece there. Then that's something that because that's just not, it's not a proper way to behave. It's going to invite complaints from others. It's going to invite people to either have an ayin hara or complain about your behavior. Now the Gemara continues. Tanur banan, dalet prutot ein behem siman brachad olam. There's four types of money or earnings that do not see a siman bracha. Schar kotvim, the profits, the salaries of the sofrei stam. Schar miturgamanim, the profits, the salaries of the amplifiers. Schar yitomim, the profits that one earns from taking care of the estate of the yitomim. Maot abot midinat hayam, and monies that are earned from sending your boats overseas. So bishlama schar miturgamanim, I understand what the problem here is with the wages of the amplifiers. Now miturgaman, with someone who stand in front of the Amora would darshan, whisper into his ear, and then he would amplify it to the people. He would say it very loud so the people could hear what he was saying. Shmishum de mechsek is chai Shabbat. Because when does everybody come to the shir to hear it? It looks like it's on Shabbat, and it looks like he's earning on Shabbat. Now the question is, was he earning on Shabbat or was he not? I mean, he's working on Shabbat, and that's when he's getting his earnings. So why isn't it called chai Shabbat? So the Gemara should call it chai Shabbat. If it's not chai Shabbat, what's the problem? So there are those that suggest that the Meturgaman was there all week long. He was working there all week. The problem was that the Balabatim only show up on Shabbat, and the Balabatim are the ones who are paying for him. So the Balabatim were paying for him, and they only show up on Shabbat. That's why it looks like Shkar Shabbat. It's not Shkar Shabbat, because he's there all week long doing this. But because the Balabatim only see him on Shabbat, they feel like he's getting Shkar Shabbat. Umaot Yitomim Nami, I understand why when you are basically investing the estate of the Yomim for their benefit. Why there's a problem? Because la b'nei mechila ninhu. Sometimes the investments go sour. Sometimes things don't work out perfectly, or you take more than you're supposed to from it, whatever that is, but they can't forgive you because they're ketanim. Since they're ketanim, they're not b'nei mechila. They cannot forgive you for taking what you're not supposed to. Ba'ot ha-ba'ot mi'b'dinat ha-yam. What's the problem with making profits from these shipping ventures? Shom delav kol yoma mitrachesh nisa. Not every day does a miracle happen. That these are dangerous ventures to send your boats out to sea every time to bring back merchandise. It takes miracles for you to come back every time with the merchandise and not to lose these ships. And so because of that, you shouldn't, if you engage in this, eventually you're going to fall to the odds. You're going to succumb to the odds and things are going to, something bad's going to happen. And one time the boat's just not going to come back and you're going to lose your money. You're going to lose all your merchandise. So that means enu siman bracha on these putot, because yeah, you might do a lot of, you might have a lot of profits, but in the end, you might lose it all back when one of the ships doesn't come back. And we know that based on the Kitvei HaRambam, that the Rambam had a brother who he's very close to, who was a shipper, who was a merchant that went to India, basically, and was bringing back wares from India. Many times he did the shipping. The Rambam was actually a co-investor, and his brother was his supporter. He was the one who supported him and took care of his family, the Rambam's family. The Rambam writes about himself that he was despondent. He was almost in a state of depression over a number of years over the loss of his brother. His brother, at one point, his ship sunk on one of these trips to India, and he never returned. So he was distraught. He was very, very close to his brothers. He was distraught over that which happened to his brother. And beyond that, it changed his whole life. His brother supported him, and now he had no support. He had no way to make a living. And the Rambam now has to go and make ends meet because his brother had been supporting him until then. But we see that there were dangers in going to the shipping and being in these businesses that are dangerous. You can't rely on a miracle every day. What's the problem with being a sofer stam and getting money for that? Why is that something that's in a way seeming bracha? So I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, taniyot, yoshvu anshei knesset ha-gdola. There were 24 fasts. The anshei knesset ha-gdola fasted al kotvei sofrim sfarim, tefillim mezuzot, on the sofer stam, shlo yitashru, so they should not become wealthy. Shimalei mitashrim in kotvim. They got wealthy, they'd stop writing. So they want them to keep writing. And we want to keep writing. There has to be a sense that they won't get rich from this. Because if they get rich from this, they're going to retire. They're not going to be doing this anymore. So if we want to keep them in the business, then we have to have it that they make money, but they don't get rich from doing this. So that was the suggestion over here. Maya says, Tanu Rabbanan, Kotvei Sfarim, Tefillin Mezuzot, Hein, Vitagrehem, they and their wholesalers, Vitagrei Tagrehem, and the middlemen, Koloskim, Amlechet Shamayim, anyone who's engaged in the sale of these items, Lutuye Mochrei Tchelet, to include people who also sell Tchelet for Tzitzit, Einan roim siman bracha deolam. They do not say a siman bracha. Vimoskim lishma. If they do it lishma, then roim. Then they can have a siman bracha. So this is basically what we just said before in the Gemara. What we're worried about, or the Anshei Knesset HaGdola are worried about, is that if they become wealthy, they're going to stop working. So if you're doing it for your living, and they're doing it shalo lishma, then you really have a problem. If they became wealthy, they'd stop working. They wouldn't do it anymore. So that's why we have that curse. From basically the curse from the Anshei Knesset HaGdola that you will never get rich from doing this. Other than if you do it lishma, if you're doing l'shem shamayim, then there's a possibility that it would work and you could become rich from it, because if you're doing lishma, even after you become wealthy, you're not going to stop, because the whole reason you're doing it is lishma. So it has nothing to do with the money. So the fact that you got more money now is not going to change the fact that you want to do this and you're going to do it lishma. B'nei Baishan, the people of Baishan, these are the children, meaning the next generation of the people in Baishan. Nahug, to lo have an Azlin Mitzur Litzidon. They did not go on Erev Shabbat from Tzur to Tzidon, from Tyre to Sidon. They were ports along the Mediterranean. It's not clear here if they went out. It was a ferry ride between them, but it was a short distance between them, and they used to travel it all the time. But they did not do this on Erev Shabbat. B'malei Shabbat on Erev Shabbat, because there was a Shuk on that day, but they didn't go to the Shuk because it was Erev Shabbat, and they didn't want that to interfere with their preparations for Shabbat. So Atu B'naihu, their children, the next generation comes, Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan, before Rabbi Yochanan, Amru lo, Avatin, our fathers, Efshar lehu, they were wealthy, so they didn't have to work on Erev Shabbat, so it wasn't a problem. That's why they didn't travel. So that's why they had that minhag. Anan lo Efshalan, we can't survive like this. We can't do what they did, because we're not as wealthy, and we can't just not work on Fridays. Samu lehu, Kvar kiblu avotechem aleihem. Your forefathers already accepted the minhag, and this is the power of minhag, that you cannot upend what your forefathers did. That's the minhag makom, and you must maintain the minhag makom. The pasuk says, "Shnemar shma bini musar avicha, v'altitosh torat imecha." This is the source for the fact that minhagim have tokef within halacha, which is the pasuk says, Shema b'ni musar avicha. You should listen to the musar avicha, but also from the concept musar from the word misorah, that the father imparts to the son the idea of the misorah. He teaches him the Torah directly, and that's the idea of the misorah. Now, va'al titosh terati mecha is limud ayidei maaseh, from the way that the mother conducts herself, means the actions of the mother, the way that she maintains the household, the way that she brings up the children. That is Terat Imecha. Terat Imecha is the unspoken Misorah. It's the Misorah that comes through the Minhag, or the way that the people conduct themselves. And so that's what Chazal learned from this. That is Shema B'ni Musar Avicha Titush Terat Imecha, that there's a restriction against violating the Minhagim of one's forefathers. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan says to him. Your forefathers accepted it as a Minhag, and since they accepted it already, it becomes a full-fledged Halacha now because of their Minhag. And we can't undo what your forefathers did, and therefore you're going to have to maintain their practice of not traveling on Erev Shabbat. Okay, we'll stop over here.